Hello, everybody. How's it going? Welcome back to the History of Video Games. My name is Wes, and I'm here, as always, with the one and only Ben. How you doing today, Ben?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you, Wes?
I am good. A little exhausted. I did physical labor today, something that doesn't usually happen for me, but you know, it's good every once in a while.
Okay, nice.
But I mean, we're here to talk about video games, you know, so let's get back into what's important. Why don't you tell me what you've been playing recently?
Well, I've got a couple things I could talk to you about, Wes, but I think I'm going to surprise you with one. A mobile game, of all things. Oh. You don't hear us talking about those very often, for good reason. But I saw this funny, it was like a Reddit post that was like, are people still playing, you know, Angry Bird and stuff in 2023? Like, a mobile game hasn't been like mainstream in a long time, I feel like. You don't see them as much anymore, I don't think.
At least like not as dominating like pop culture in the public conscience.
Yeah. So I was reading through that because it was interesting, but people were recommending like their favorite mobile games that were kind of new, right? To say, no, I'm playing this right now. And one of the ones that caught my attention was a game called Battle Cats. I don't know, it sounded funny.
Yeah.
And this is kind of a weird thing because like, I think Battle Cats proves like if you've got like a nice art style and like pretty fair free-to-play mechanics, people will just love your game. Because the actual gameplay is like nothing that we haven't seen a million times. It's one of these, you get a resource generation happening in the background, and you use that resource to spawn in this case, cats, and they will travel in a straight line across the screen, fighting enemies along the way until they reach the enemy base. And once that's destroyed, you win the game. So you don't actually control any of the fighting. All you do is spawn stuff in and then watch it go. So it's a game that I've seen many, many times, both on mobile and like on browser games and stuff, I think. And it really doesn't do anything new. The only thing the game has going for it is that the art style is really good. The whole thing is based around the fact that all of your things that you're spawning in are cats. And you might think, okay, well, what does that look like? Well, like your base cat is a cat, but then it starts getting like off the walls. It's like fish cat, and it's like a cat with like a fish body.
Oh, nice.
or like a cow cat, or ninja cat, or titan cat, which looks like a Attack on Titan, but it's a cat face. And it's just as like, it gets crazy. And I really like the art style. It looks very, I don't know if it's hand drawn, but it looks kind of hand drawn. Most of them are in just in black and white colors, but there are some in full color. But it's pretty interesting, and I've been playing it for like a good 2 weeks, and I think it's pretty fun. It does have a energy mechanic, so you can only play for 10 or 15 minutes at a time. But other than that, it feels pretty fair. Like, I haven't run into a brick wall where I like need to pay money to continue. But maybe that'll come later. I have no idea. But at least for now, I think it's pretty fun. So it's good for a few minutes for a mobile game. So
nice.
I'm enjoying it. Yeah. But it's pretty like simple. Not a lot going on.
Sometimes that's, for me at least, the best thing for a mobile game is something you just kind of turn on, look at real quick, have fun either while you're waiting for something or you just want a quick mental diversion and then you're done, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Not any huge buy-in if you don't want it.
Yeah. So I think this game does a pretty good job of that. Even if I only have 10 minutes, I'll progress in the game a little bit, you know? So that's always a fun part of it. So yeah, it's just kind of cool. You're going around conquering like nations as a Battle Cat army. So
yeah, what's not to love there?
But that's what I've been up to. What have you been up to, Wes?
Well, so I've kind of been up to more of the same recently, but I will give some quick updates as well as some speculation and intrigue, not really intrigue, about future games coming out. So I've still been playing a lot of Star Citizen, and, you know, I respect the alpha process, but it is a big bummer that they still haven't released that big patch or that patch that they were going to do post 3.18 to make things more playable. And I'm one of the lucky people who has been able to play with no issue. But since they're still teasing a potential wipe to purchased ships in game with this new patch, I'm just sitting on a pile of money with nothing to do with it. So I've lost steam on that for now. As much as I had been having fun just kind of doing like this engaging repetitive grind, it was sort of a nice thing to do in the evenings. At this point, I think I'm most likely just going to wait until that patch drops so I can actually buy the cargo hauling ship that I was looking at, a variant of the Freelancer ship, which I've never flown before. So I'll probably just jump in then. And then speaking of grinding games, I've also been doing Sea of Thieves with friends, of course, where it is absolutely chaotic fun, mayhem, fighting skeleton pirate bosses and taking your plunder all over the place, but also doing single player and just hiding behind a rock and doing some fishing and hoping that nobody comes and bothers you. And the fishing mini game is very simple, but it works really well. And even just the backdrop of the waves, your ship rocking, the beautiful world and the day-night cycle and storms and all that make it just a really fun, like, idle, somewhat active pastime. So I've been doing that. Really, the big grinds in Sea of Thieves are just for, like, reputations and skins. There's no real, like, better gear or weapons that you can unlock. And there's a certain line of skins for fishing that I'm looking at. So not hoping to, like, go crazy on it and unlock all of them, but I'm just making bit by bit a little bit of progress there and having fun with that. And the last thing I wanted to talk about is that, I don't know if you saw, Ben, a couple days ago, which this episode is being recorded way ahead of time, so this might be a little bit old news, but there were 10 minutes of gameplay footage released for the new Zelda game coming out on the Switch, Tears of the Kingdom. Mm-hmm. And it looks pretty wild. I mean, it looks very similar visually and gameplay wise to Breath of the Wild, which I've got no problems with, but you can now find logs and fans and wheels out in the wild and fuse them together to make vehicles, which for an open world game, I think is just going to be mayhem. And I love it. And you can also do things like take a stick, fuse a rock to it to make a hammer. That's just a stick with a rock on it. The physics of that, I have no idea how it's going to work. There was one clip where they fused a stick to a pitchfork and it was like a 15-foot long weapon now. So I don't know how all that stuff's going to work, but hey, I trust them. They did a good job with Breath of the Wild. I still haven't beat Breath of the Wild. So now that we're coming up about a month and a half away to the release of Tears of the Kingdom, I'm feeling the pressure there. So I might have to go back. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty close to the end and just sort of a beeline it and try not to get distracted by the open worldness of it. So yeah, that's probably in my gaming future. I'm looking forward to Tears of the Kingdom. Not sure if I'm going to buy it on release, but I don't think I'm going to wait too long. They did such a good job with Breath of the Wild. I've got pretty high hopes for this one.
Okay. Yeah, we'll have to see. I have not looked at that video yet. So I haven't played the first Breath of the Wild, to be fair. So not on my radar right now, but you know, we'll see. We'll see what the reviews say, if the hype is, you know, it lives up to it.
Right. Yeah.
And maybe I'll hop on board. Who knows?
Right on. Well, now let's talk about our special topic today. It's a interesting one, is how I'm going to say. One that should be, but maybe isn't, very exciting. The release of the successor to the Apple II, the Apple III.
Oh man, that sounds like a pretty big deal, Wes.
Right?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, let me tell you what I'm talking about. So let me start off with giving a little bit of backstory on the sort of conception of the Apple III. Well, originally, Steve Wozniak and Steve Jobs thought that the Apple II would be mainly purchased by computer hobbyists. In reality, it ended up that small businesses purchased 90% of Apple II computers. I'm not too sure by what year that statistic is, maybe just by the time that they had started looking at building a new computer. But they realized that they could really capitalize on this business market that they weren't directly hitting. So they wanted to design the Apple III to be a business-oriented successor to the Apple II, to have a lot more features that were appealing to businesses. The design team for the computer was led by a guy named Wendell Sander, and it originally started development all the way back in 1978, but through various moments throughout the development cycle, it was rushed. There were constantly changing expectations that were being forced onto the design team by a kind of like helicopter marketing team that was changing every single day and being like, nah, actually, we want this now. Nah, actually, we want this. Not to put the blame solely on them, but from a lot of different articles, it sounds like the over input of the marketing team is what a lot of people think led to some not so great stuff with the Apple III. But as an example of sort of the rushed nature of the development of the Apple III, when the Apple III was announced, which I think was in May of 1980, only three working models actually existed at the time that it was announced. And none of those models were actually like in a chassis or resembled a computer. Like they were all just kind of like boards wired together. So they originally had a July release date after that May announcement, but they had to push it out to November, which is why we're talking about it now. Another one of the big problems with this computer that led to lots of problems down the line is that allegedly Steve Jobs told the designers that he did not want any cooling fans in the computer at all because it was too noisy and inelegant. So they thought, or maybe just because they had to deal with it, they were like, I guess this will work, that if they made the whole body of the chassis of the computer out of aluminum, it would work as a sufficient heat sink. But spoiler alert, it didn't. And so with all of these competing and quickly changing expectations for the computer and design input that sometimes didn't make sense, it released in November in really rough shape, and the first 14,000 computers that it issued had to be recalled because they just pretty much didn't work. It had obviously overheating issues, which led to the boards warping and chips falling out of their sockets because the boards were getting warped. I don't know if this was a side effect of the boards warping as well, but also apparently the real-time clocks in the computer often just didn't work either. And there were just a host of other problems that made the Apple III this, you know, very expensive endeavor by Apple to make this new computer, this new successor to the Apple II. It really just ended up being a failure at launch. One other example of how it didn't exactly go too well is that 2 months after the launch of the Apple III, there were only three Apple business programs released for it. And they apparently weren't expecting to release any more programs for it for another 6 months. So I don't know if that was just because it was all hands on deck trying to fix the Apple III and sell it again or what, but it was in pretty rough shape. To their credit, I think they did try to fix it like pretty aggressively, but it still took a very long time. I don't know if you're going to mention it at all, Ben, and maybe we won't spoil it, but the Apple III isn't going to be around very long, even after it does get fixed, unfortunately. So It's a bit of a letdown in that, you know, it's the from Apple II to Apple III sounds very exciting, but on release, it didn't really work very well. But that doesn't mean that people aren't going to get their hands on it. So I'm curious to hear what you have to say, Ben, about the specs and see if there's anything that maybe would have been very exciting if it had worked.
Yeah, I mean, as you mentioned, they were kind of selling this computer as a business computer, which is not usually what we like to hear. but I do find the specs to be interesting. I mean, I get to imagine, like, this is right around the same time that, like, the TRS-80 Coco just got announced and released, and the Commodore VIC is in testing. Like, these are huge companies, huge competitors with very noticeable improvements in their computer line that are releasing. So what does the Apple III like specs have over the Apple II? It's really not a lot. I mean, It uses the same CPU, MOSTEC 6502, this time by the company Synertech, I'm going to say, Synertech, which is just a company that's been licensed to produce those chips. But, like, the display resolution is the same. They have a, I think it's called, like, a high graphics mode, which is 280 by 192 pixels in color. This time it can go up to 16 colors, which is good, instead of the, I think it was 6 in the original Apple II. So it is in color, or could be if this was attached to a color monitor, which it did not ship with. So you had to do that yourself. So that could be good. But it also had like a super hyper, I don't know what the official wording is on it, but like a resolution that was about twice in one of the dimensions is 560 by 192 pixels, but that could only be in monochrome, which is, again, not what we want to see. So it could do like really, really sharp graphics, but in monochrome only. So that's kind of annoying. I think the introductory price is kind of crazy. It's like over $4,000 for this computer. And we're seeing computers in like the $1,000 range for a lot of competitors, you know, out there. Maybe $2,000, but like that seems really crazy. The thing that this does have, and maybe the real key selling point, is it has a lot of RAM for the time. Came with 128 kilobytes of RAM, which was expandable up to 512 kilobytes. 128, I would say that's close to the top. I mean, we're seeing like, I think the VIC was only coming out with like 4 kilobytes of RAM to start or something like that. So that is a lot of RAM. And I think it came with some onboard ROM as well. So it could run a lot of heavy programs on it, and that's definitely what this is for, but not a whole lot for us. It did have a actual like good sound channel this time, a 6-bit sound channel, whereas the Apple II just had like some weird built-in speaker thing, like cassette, I don't know. It wasn't good. But this has a better sound channel. So it has some small improvements, but there's nothing really major here. I do think it would have been better than the Apple II had it released in a good state, mainly because of the color. But I was hoping for like some better resolution, maybe some, I don't know, easier ways to program on it. But weirdly, like because this computer wasn't for hobbyists, Apple didn't release a lot of like technical specifications on how to make your own programs or how to get in into the nitty and gritty of the hardware, because they didn't want people to do that. So some weird decisions on their part. I also want to mention this was introduced with a new operating system called Apple Sauce, they called it, but it's SOS. But Sauce is a good nickname for that, which is a new disk operating system. So that, I think, is going to be something that we're going to see in the future. I think it gets expanded and then ported onto Apple's later models. So we will see that again, but not a whole lot here for us. In fact, the Apple III fails so spectacularly, Wes, I don't think there's a single game that ever gets released just for the Apple III.
Wow.
It is backwards compatible, so pretty much all the games on the Apple III are basic games, you know, things that were on the Apple II, but nothing released just for the Apple III. So, as far as I know, definitely not in 80. I don't think anything in 81 either. So, not a lot for us.
Yeah.
Bit of a letdown for this sequel.
And it is a business computer, of course, but with some business computers, you know, if they actually work, we have seen games that interest us. This is just a combination of not intended for gaming and not really put together very well.
Which it makes me feel like there's an opportunity for these other companies to really steal some of the market share from Apple.
Yeah.
Which already didn't have a large market share. I think the TRS-80 was way more popular than it. So yeah, it's just a weird move. And and we'll have to see what Apple does next. I believe the Apple III fails in the eyes of many initial purchasers, like so much so that their next one the naming convention goes back to Apple II.
Yeah.
Naming convention. So it's like, yeah, it's not good.
Well, that is interesting, a little disappointing, but that's all right. At least we still have the Apple II for now. But why don't we take a quick break and then talk about some new games for November of 1980 in our timeline.
Welcome back. Let's hop into it. Today we are in November of 1980, and we're just going to start with some arcade games that released in 1980, starting with a pretty big one here. It's called Battlezone by Atari. It's my first review of the day, and this one's a pretty exciting one. I do want to mention real quick, Wes, I've seen dates for this game for February of 1980, but I have seen dates also for November. I think it was in November I saw that it was debuted at the AMOA show, which if you guys don't know what that is, it was like a big trade show back in the day. So it was unveiled there. I'm not sure when it actually started to sell units, but we're going with the November date. And this one is a pretty cool one, Wes. It's based off of the Vector Graphics hardware that Atari made for their Lunar Lander game and then Asteroids. And now we have it for a tank game. It's kind of cool because it's a wireframe tank game where you're controlling this tank, you're moving around, you're shooting stuff. It plays kind of similar to Panther, which we did, I believe, on the Play-Doh system way back in like maybe 75 or something.
Yeah.
And it looks pretty similar. But I have to say, Wes, this one plays a heck of a lot better
than
Panther did. I think there's just one reason for it, really, which is like, we've got high frame rates in this game. Like when I move on the keyboard, it actually moves like immediately. So it's very responsive. It never lags or anything. I mean, you kind of get that with vector graphics games. It's different because even Panther on the Play-Doh system, it was wireframe, but it wasn't vector based. So it's a bit different. In this case, everything just feels a lot more fluid. And there's this perspective happening here, too. So as tanks get close to you, they kind of expand their model to be bigger in a way that you just can't do with sprites. Like, you'd have to have, like, a million sprites for every little change of resolution when it's coming in and out of perspective. But in this case, it's just fluid because the whole thing, like, expands and contracts in a way that only vector graphics can do. So the whole game just looks really good, runs really good. Very responsive, and I love it has some vector graphics tropes, like when you destroy a tank, it like explodes into a million parts.
Oh, nice.
And I love that. The game also has just some other nice graphical features that just make it feel really good to play. Like in the background, you've got these big mountains that kind of hem you in so that you're fighting in this central area. But on one of the mountains, there's a volcano that's actually spewing lava. You can see it like kind of exploding in the background, which is cool. There's also a moon in the background, which I really like as well. And there's a lot of obstacles on screen, which are pretty much just there for cover and to make it hard to hit certain things. But unlike a lot of other games that I see, when you drive into the cover, like you drive into a barrier in this game, you don't instantly explode. Or like nothing weird happens. It feels very natural. Like you kind of bump off in a way that you would imagine doing so in real life. Like there's some physics to it. And so everything just feels really nice and fluid. So that was my big takeaway from the game, because the game itself is not anything that we really haven't seen before. It's just like a crosshair on your screen kind of game. You control this cabinet with two different joysticks. And it's kind of standard tank controls where, like, if they're both forward, you go forward. if one of them is forward and the other one's back, you're turning, and if they're both back, you go backwards. I do think that's a little hard to control, especially on a keyboard, but I won't hold that against the game. I think it makes total sense. The only other thing about it that I think is kind of weird is that since everything is wireframe, the cover is see-through. So if you can just see like the enemy on the other side of the cover, and it looks like I'm hitting them, but there's like an invisible wall in between you and them. If you don't see the outline of that barrier. So I wish the barriers, despite them being wireframe, were like opaque in some way, so you couldn't see through them. But everything else about the game looks really good. As you progress and start killing a lot of tanks, eventually super tanks spawn, which are like, they have like twice the amount of speed that you have and are very deadly. Also, like some ships come and fly at you, and they fly pretty fast as well. But I never really got that far. I wasn't that good at the game, to be honest, but I still had a lot of fun checking it out. So with all that being said, why don't I get into my ratings? So for gameplay, I ended up giving this a 3 out of 10. I had a pretty good time with it. I think it's just the fact that like it's combining some of the best things about vector graphics, like the fact that when you shoot something, it explodes in a really nice way, and everything like comes in and out of perspective really nice, and everything looks really good. And it's combining that with a really high frame rate and responsive controls, and that's just like a recipe for success for shooter games. That's what you need. So I thought it was pretty fun to drive around. It's like a first person game, so you're kind of in like this open play field, and you can just kind of move around and drive anywhere in that play field. You don't even have to like go after anybody. Like you can just drive to the corner of the map if you want to. So it's kind of interesting. And I don't know, I just felt it was pretty fun. It was everything I wanted it to be without any of the problems that we've seen before. So for that reason, I give it a 3 out of 10. For graphics, I gave that a 3.25 out of 10 because I thought the vector graphics are really cool, despite it being just in black and in this case green instead of white, which I do appreciate. The green makes you feel like maybe you're fighting it in like maybe a night goggles on or something. So I do like the fact that they have the moon there in the background too to maybe enforce that. But despite the fact that it's just like pretty much black with green wireframe graphics, I think it looks really, really nice. I really like when you shoot a tank, it just like flies in a way that's totally unnatural to a billion pieces. That part is great. When you get hit, your screen gets cracked, which is also pretty cool. And the stuff in the background, as little as they are, they make a huge difference. Just those mountains, the little volcano, and the moon. I really appreciate those little touches. I wish the barriers were a little bit more interesting. They're pretty much just like, you know, imagine flat ground with nothing on it, and then like box or like triangle. And like those are your barriers. It's like
right. Nothing
distinct. I wish that was a little bit better. But I think in general, it looks really good. I like the look of the tanks. They look a little futuristic, a little more sharp than like a normal tank is. And there's also those ships that I mentioned. There's like a UFO one, and there's also one that kind of reminds me like a TIE fighter, but it's maybe instead of like kind of having an H outline, it's just a V shape. But it's a pretty cool looking model. So overall, I think graphically it looks pretty good, and there's even a radar on the screen that kind of points you in the direction of the enemies, which is definitely helpful and required for some of the super tanks and stuff if you want to try to shoot them before they get you. Moving on to sound, this was by far the lowest part of this game. The sound is just not very good. I mean, you've got some weird like Space Invaders sounds, like the bonus ship sound and Space Invaders is in here for some reason.
Oh boy.
You also have a sonar noise, which is happening all the time, and it's just a constant beep. Really annoying. I don't know how to fix that, but it's just, this is not it. It has some like spacey sci-fi laser sounds and stuff. as well as your normal shooting and explosion sounds, but I just didn't think any of them sounded particularly good. For a tank game, I'm really looking for like a big, bassy, you know, giant subwoofery sound for like the shooting sound effect and stuff, and it's not here. So instead it's like Space Invaders noises with some weird laser phaser sounds, I'll say. So yeah, sound was not good in this one. So just 2 out of 10 there. For relevance, I ended up giving it a 7.25 out of 10. This game, it didn't sell like super well, but it sold pretty well. I think it sold something like 15,000 cabinets. And it was by Atari, a big vector graphics game. This game would actually, the US Army took a look at this game, Wes. Or maybe not this game specifically, but the US Army was interested in maybe developing some sort of training program for their soldiers.
Oh, wow.
And they approached Atari, and Atari was like, well, we have this tank game. And so they started working on this version of this game called Bradley Trainer for the US Army. And I think like two cabinets of Bradley Trainer exist today. Pretty much it's the exact same game, but I think the control layout is like exactly as it is in a Bradley Trainer, which is pretty cool. I read a pretty funny anecdote about one of the people who made it, where they like entered someone's car and like they weren't sure where they were going, and they like went to the secret base, and inside was like a Bradley vehicle that like nobody else could go into.
Crazy.
It was pretty interesting. I thought that was kind of a cool part of this game's history as well. Obviously that didn't really pan out, but it's an interesting like what if scenario. You know, what if Atari started working for the government? What would happen? So I like that thought. But yeah, so I think it's pretty relevant for selling well and having some weird stuff associated with it. And overall, I give it a 2.75 out of 10. It's pretty good, but it's lacking in the sound department quite a lot. While the vector graphics look really nice, you know, it's not true color. We wish we had that. We wish we had the best of both worlds. But I think this does pretty good with the vector graphics. It plays very well. It was pretty fun. If it is something that maybe we've seen before, I mean, Panther pretty much did the exact same thing like a couple of years ago. But it just plays and feels a lot better here. So you got to give it some cred there. But yeah, Battle Zone.
Very cool. Yeah. I love those futuristic looking tanks, man. Looks like a Cybertruck, basically.
That's true. It does look like a Cybertruck.
It gives me very like living in a simulation kind of feel, like any of those vector graphics games, you know? So definitely love the aesthetic.
This might be like one of the first vector graphics games we've seen in a like first person style.
I think you're right.
No, I'm thinking about it.
As far as being able to move your character too, like we've seen, I forget what it was called, Turret Gunner or something like that by Cinematronics, where you're, you know, it's like a target shooting game.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of first person, but not really, because in this you're actually controlling a character. So I think you're right. And that's a very cool thing about Battlezone.
Yeah. I still am not sure how close we are to the end of vector graphics games. I feel like we must be pretty close by now in the timeline. So this might be one of the best looking vector graphics games ever made. I don't know, but it definitely looks really good. So, and I'm sure it looks really like even better in person.
Right.
Because vector graphics games, again, it's like I'm looking at it through a screen, so it's already pixelated, but it's not pixels for vector graphics games. So if you see them in person, they are extra special. So I think it's definitely one that you want to try to look for if you're an arcade fan.
Yeah, and we will have to keep our eye out for more vector graphics games as we keep going through the timeline. But for now, let's talk about some honorable mentions. We have one here called Armor Attack by Cinematronics, which was a vector graphics version of the original tank game.
Okay. So top down on that one.
Yes.
And there was a clone for it, Armor Attack by Rockola, which was a licensed version. And there was also a licensed version to Sega that I think came out in 81. So I'll just mention it now.
Yeah, just bundle them in there. But now let's move on to the first game that I got to review today. It is a Nintendo game. Always love to see those. Called Radar Scope, which you probably never heard of, but you're going to learn today what Radar Scope is. And it has a really interesting history to it. Lots of people worked on it, but of course, one notable person, Shigeru Miyamoto, helped out with the art on this. He wasn't a huge part of this game, but he did have a hand in it. And when it originally released in Japan, it was somewhat successful, but didn't really do fantastic. And then around the same time, there was a North American division for Nintendo being created. So they brought, I think, 3,000 units over to the US to sell. And it did really poorly in the US. I think they might have only sold 1,000 of the 3,000 that they had. But as a result of this, many of these leftover cabinets were used to help create cabinets for a new game in the works. And that game was Donkey Kong. So in a weird way, a lot of people say Radar Scope failing helped make Donkey Kong what it is. So this game wasn't commercially successful, but it is an interesting one for its history in that aspect. And also it is a pretty interesting game in its own right. It just must have hit at the wrong time or something. Also, I want to mention that I've seen several versions of this game without digitized voice audio, but also one with digitized voice audio, which sounds pretty cool. So I am going to review that version. Let me talk about the gameplay now for Radar Scope. It is a pretty straightforward Galaxian type game, but it does have a few twists to it to keep it interesting. It has a 3D perspective to it, where the aliens waiting at the top of the screen look farther away and they kind of grow in size as they get closer to you. Similar to Devil Zone that we checked out before. And these guys do, instead of the Space Invaders march down the screen, they hover at the top and then do their dive bombs occasionally, much more Galaxian style. Your shots can't reach all the way to the top of the screen, but the closest row of the enemy aliens kind of bob up and down, and you can hit them when they're closest to you. But one of the main exciting things about your firing pattern in this game is that you can shoot two or maybe three. It's hard to tell because it's a fast moving game, but you can shoot two or maybe three shots at a time and have them on screen instead of the classic only one shot on screen at a time, which makes a big difference in this type of game because I love just spamming the fire button. Yep. In later stages of this game, the UFOs drop bombs that will damage your space station. I think the theming of this is that you're kind of viewing the radar of a turret while you're on a space station defending it. And so there's a space station health bar at the bottom of the screen that the enemy's lasers that they shoot at you don't do any damage to, but the bombs that they drop, which slowly fall to the bottom of the screen, will damage it. And once the health meter at the bottom of the screen fully turns red and its health has been depleted, I think the station explodes and you lose a life. Even though it's a hard game, for whatever reason, it's usually difficult because you get shot. Your ship gets shot and you die instead of the space station blowing up. So I couldn't get it to happen. And also none of the people I watched got it to happen. But my guess would be it would either be a game over or you would just lose a life. And there was also this weird interaction where I don't know why, but sometimes these bombs, instead of landing on the bottom and exploding, they would land on the bottom, wait there for a bit, and then bounce sideways across the bottom trying to hit you until they went off screen. So I'm not sure what triggered that, but it's an interesting interaction. Another interesting twist is that occasionally, and I think this only happens in the later waves, when you shoot one of the UFOs, they, instead of just exploding, will turn into like a flaming crash that careens towards the bottom of the screen, and you can shoot it again to blow it up. And if you don't, it actually does a lot of health damage to the space station. But other than that, you know, it's a pretty straightforward Galaxian game. It seems like the only difference in the waves is that they get a bit faster and the AI maybe gets quote unquote smarter or something like that. But there's only one type of enemy and they don't change other than changing color as you go through the waves. So now let me get into my ratings for Radar Scope. For graphics, I gave it a 3.75 out of 10. There are some pluses and minuses to Radar Scope's visuals, but overall, I think it is a great looking game. On the plus side, the 3D effect looks great. There's lots of sprites for the ships getting bigger, which look really good. Not super detailed, but they're all multicolored, so it looks great. When they dive bomb at you, sometimes they do like a U-turn and you actually see like the underside and the back of the ship, which is a different color than the top of the ship. So it's this nice effect where you get to see more of the ship and more colors. The enemy UFOs are also this like cool futuristic fighter jet looking thing instead of the classic saucer or weird alien monster thing like that. So I did like that a lot. But as I mentioned, they're all the same. They're not even different colors in the same wave. They just change from wave to wave, which is a little unfortunate. So at the start of the game, it's just 48 specifically because it mentions it at the beginning of the game, but 48 of all the same color UFO. I also really enjoyed the way that the lasers looked, the UFOs shoot. They're like green and they do sort of like a pulse explosion when they hit the bottom of the screen. The bombs also look good. They have like a spinning animation to them and a nice explosion when they blow up. And the player explosion animation is really well detailed. I think it has like four sprites. It's kind of like this big mushroom cloud explosion that at the last frame of it has like a skull in the middle of the mushroom cloud, which looks really good. But the negatives of the graphics for this game is that the background is a little disappointing. Maybe it has something to do with the fact that you're looking at a radar screen, I guess, but the background is just like this weird blue grid. And it, you know, kind of helps establish the vanishing point at the top of the screen, but it just looks a little boring. There's also some red stars in the background, but they don't twinkle or anything or change colors. So that was the part that really took me away from it, the background. But all the sprites on screen and the animation and explosions, I think, look really good. Now let's move on to sound. I gave this a 3 out of 10, although again, it is kind of a conflicting rating. I'm considering the digitized voice version, which, as far as I can tell, is real. And it's pretty crazy. I mean, it has like at least 4 to 5 voice lines. It says stuff like complete attack mission and all fighters line up, scramble, scramble, and fun stuff like that. And a lot of it sounds pretty clear and crisp, too. So I enjoyed that. None of it was like super annoying going on all the time. And I feel like it really did help set the mood for the game. Moving on from the digitized voice, though, is where things kind of fall apart a bit. The dive bombing noise is just all right. Just a normal spacey kind of whistle noise. The explosion and laser noises, I did like those. I thought they were all pretty solid. And then there's also this weird pulsing tune in the background. And it starts out as just one repeating note, but it seems like as you get further in the wave, it becomes like a 3 or 4 note sequence. And it does, you know, get a little annoying, but I did think it was a nice addition to the game. It's not just the classic Space Invaders March tune, and it has a little bit more rhythm and interest going on in it. And we always like, as long as it's not completely annoying, having some kind of sound and music going on in the background. Moving on to gameplay now, I gave this a 3 out of 10 as well. It's kind of bland. I mean, it's like a solid Galaxian type shooter, but it just doesn't really do anything all that special. I thought that being able to shoot faster would really make me like this game a lot more, but the enemies just kind of feel like things we've seen before. They don't change in between the waves, and so it wasn't really all that exciting. It's weird. I don't think it did anything bad. It's just it didn't do anything great. So it's just kind of like a good Galaxian type game, and that's where it sits. So
it's a forgettable one, maybe.
Yeah, at least as far as the gameplay. I mean, I do like the digitized voice and the visuals, but yeah, even with the mines dropping and the extra added element of defending the space station, definitely a little forgettable for the gameplay. Moving on to relevance now, though, I gave it a 7.5 out of 10 here. Like I mentioned at the beginning, some people say that the failure of this game led directly to Donkey Kong. I think that's a little bit of a stretch. I mean, I'm sure Miyamoto would have been put in charge of another game eventually and would have made Donkey Kong. But I do think the fact that they used the leftover cabinets from this game is pretty cool and does kind of give it some relevance in that way. I think some people even have like conversion kits that they're able to use on Donkey Kong cabinets to make it back into radar scope, which is kind of neat. And even if it didn't have a huge impact on Donkey Kong, I think the fact that Miyamoto, it's the last game Miyamoto worked on, as far as I know, before making Donkey Kong, that's pretty exciting. So, you know, it has a little bit of relevance there. And overall, that left me with a 3.25 out of 10. Radar Scope has fun visuals and decent sound and some cool digitized voice, but it doesn't really add that much unique gameplay. And it's a pretty saturated genre at this point. So you got to do something new if you want to really keep things interesting and hang in there. But still, it was fun enough and had some good visuals. And I always love looking at Nintendo games. So it was pretty fun to check out.
Nice. Okay. Yeah, I wasn't quite sure about that one. What do you think about it compared to Devil Zone, the other one that was in this perspective style?
I think this one might pull it off a little bit better visually. It could just be because Devil Zone was so like fast and weird, but they both kind of did the weird grid background thing. So I don't know what was going on there.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't hate it. It's not like not horrible.
No,
it's just weird.
It is weird. Like I said, I think it might have something to do with like helping visually establish the fact that those ships at the top of the screen that are tiny are far away. But yeah, I don't know. Weird choice.
All right. Well, let's get away from that one. Kind of. We've got a clone here next up by ENV, which was a bootleg of the Nintendo game, also named Radar Scope. So they do not care. They're just the stars. but let's move on to another sequel. Well, I guess Radar Scope wasn't a sequel, but kind of a precursor to Donkey Kong. This is a sequel to a game that you reviewed called Targ. It's called Spectar by Exidy. And I think I am pronouncing that right. Also released in November of 1980. And I took a look at this one since you did the original Targ. I took a look at the sequel. And I have to say, Wes, I don't know what the heck this game is. Like, why is this made?
Oh, man.
I think it's a maybe continuation of Head On. I don't know if you remember the original Head On, but it was kind of like this, had this blue background, and I think it had a green maze to it. And then Targ came out, it was a blue background with a yellow maze. And pretty much the difference between Targ and Head On is that in Targ, your car can like move in all four directions instead of just a straight line or left to right movement. And so it kind of played more like Pac-Man. And you [S2] Right. [S1] Had a gun on your car as well. So you could shoot like the enemies in the maze with you while collecting the dots. And this game is pretty much identical, so much so that I'm tempted to think like this is like the same board or something. however, they did make some improvements to the graphics. So while it's just pretty much blue and green like maze layout, now there's like 9 distinct levels, they call it, which pretty much just change the walls of the maze kind of to be different shapes, like between circles or like weird tire shapes or squares or like weird wireframe squares. They're pretty like simple. I mean, not a whole lot really going on with those different graphics. But I believe also the game's mechanics changed slightly as well. So now a stage will complete either by collecting all the dots in the level or by destroying all of the red enemies in the level. And there's a distinction between the color of the enemies because the red enemies that you have to kill, they spawn right at the beginning of the level with you. And then there are green enemies that will spawn in constantly as well. So they don't really have anything to do with the objective. They're just there to get in your way. To make it so that, I guess in the first game, there was problems where people were just like waiting to collect the last dot to farm enemies or to get ready for that next stage. But since there's like new enemies spawning all the time, there's no waiting around. You want to just like get all the dots or destroy all the enemies and then get out of there. So I think it's an all right mechanic. I didn't hate it. It wasn't like a super annoying problem or anything. The maze also has some walls in it, so you can't just, it's like before it was pretty much just a grid, like a 9x9 column grid that you race through, but now there's some walls, so it feels a little bit more maze-like, but there's still quite a lot of openings, so it's not as restrictive as something like Pac-Man or Head-On. There's a lot more open space with just a couple corners and like blockages. So that's pretty much all the game is. I mean, it plays pretty much like Pac-Man, except you've got a gun. And while that sounds pretty fun, I guess it's all right. But I think Pac-Man just does so much stuff better, to be honest, that I don't know. This game just feels very outdated right now. It's just not a good one. So Let me get into my ratings. We'll talk about it more there. Let's start with the graphics, because I think that's maybe the thing that feels most outdated about this game. I mean, I gave the graphics a 2.5 out of 10, because I don't think they're terrible. Like, I appreciate the updates they made, because when you look at Targ, I mean, that looks horrible.
Yeah, it doesn't look good.
So it definitely looks way better, but I just don't think this, like, green on blue thing looks good. Maybe for, like, one stage, but if you're in true color graphics, which this is in, why not just change like the whole color palette between levels? Instead, they're like, no, we're gonna change the squares to like circles and that's it. Okay, that just not wasn't really my problem. It's kind of just like awful in the eyes, I'll say, like the color palette that they chose. And I don't know, it's just like a maze game, but it's lacking all the like interesting characters of something like a Pac-Man. You know, it's just like generic red car, single color sprite for your enemy, and generic yellow car for your sprite, and that's it. And I'm just like, where's the ghost? Where's Pac-Man? Where's the power-ups? You know, it's like all the same. So I don't know, it's just lacking in creativity, and I just think the color palette is just awful. I didn't go like too harsh with it, because again, there's noticeable improvements from Targ, I'll say. And everything is very, like, you can tell what everything is. You can tell the dots you have to pick up, like, where they are and stuff. So it's not, like, horrible. But I just feel like, especially in November of 1980, we've just been, the last couple episodes have just been, like, crazy game after crazy game after crazy game. And then this just is not at the same level. So 2.5 there. I will say its sound was not bad. I gave sound 2.75 out of 10 because it has musical interludes, like whenever you die or start a game. There's also music going on in the background at all times. It's kind of reminiscent of the Space Invaders back and forth between two notes thing, but it's kind of like going between two sets of two notes. So there's a little bit more going on there. And then for the normal sound effects, I mean, it's your usual shooting sounds, explosion sounds. I feel like whenever you collect a dot, you get kind of this ping noise, which reminds me a lot of like pinball games, actually. So it's maybe not what I would have picked, but it's an interesting choice for the sound effect. Definitely means that there's always sound playing at all times, giving you that kind of hype or intense gameplay experience. So I think the sound does a decent job, although I think the sounds cancel each other out. So they definitely needed to have some more sound channels to make this actually be very good. So I thought the sound was, you know, it's not what I had a problem with the game. So 2.75 there. And then gameplay, I only gave that a 2.25 out of 10. There's something I haven't mentioned about the gameplay that really ended up being a sticking point for me, and that's that the car just seems to randomly slow down and speed up, and I have no idea what causes it. Like, I found videos of people playing this game, and you can definitely tell the car is speeding up and slowing down in those videos, but they don't say anything about it. So I don't know if it's like a sensitivity on the joystick or something, or maybe like if you hold up on the joystick for more than a second, it goes into high gear or something like that. I could see that, something like that happening, but I don't think that's the case, though. I don't know. I don't have any evidence about that. I think it could just be like it just randomly changes. It makes as much sense as anything. So I don't know. It just was very awkward to drive, and I felt like I was doing well, and then all of a sudden the car would speed up and run me into something. I'm like, what happened? So that is a really weird part. The car also, similar to Pac-Man, it's always moving. So it's not like something you can control all that well. Like, it just starts moving, and then now I'm just going fast now. I can't slow it down or do anything. So it's a weird control issue. The gameplay feels stale, in my opinion, in general. It's just, there's not a whole lot going on. I mean, it sounds cool. Pac-Man with guns. Like, you would think that's great, but it just kind of shows that, like, there's a little bit more something special about Pac-Man than just collecting dots, which there is. There's the mechanics of the ghosts that each chase you slightly differently, and the power-up for making all the ghosts blue and vulnerable. It's like a big part of that game, and without those little effects, it's just kind of not as fun. So my Pac-Man appreciation is going up after playing this game less. But let me move on to relevance. I mean, for a sequel that looks as bad as it does, I don't think it's sold particularly well. I'm only giving it a 4 out of 10 for relevance. I don't think this one is going to inspire much of anything. And overall, left me with a 2.5 out of 10, which is not like a horrible score, but I feel like I've been giving out the 3s lately, Wes, and I'm just ready to give out more 3s. I don't want to be in the 2 land anymore. And yeah, this definitely feels like something that should have came out like last year.
For sure. Yeah. Well, I mean, I'd say it's disappointing, but Targ also wasn't fantastic to begin with. Maybe it's time for them to retire this little duo of games. We'll see.
I will say, I want to quickly mention Spectar, and I think most of Exidy's games, I read that, at least for Spectar, it was given over to the public domain by Pete Kaufman before he died. So,
oh, wow.
Just a quick round of applause for good guy Pete Kaufman making his games public domain. I appreciate that.
Yeah, very cool. All right, well, let's move on now to some honorable mentions. We have a bunch of clones of Spectar here. We have Rallies by Novar, Rallies by Music Box Brescia or something like that. Sorry, Music Box Brescia. I don't know, I didn't say that right, but we'll go with that. Phantom by Proel and Panzer by Proel, which, again, we're all clones of Spectar. And now let's get to my last review for the day. A very exciting one, a game called Space Panic, which gives me anxiety. Oh, yeah. But it's by Universal, came out in November, as all of these games did. And it is often considered to be, or maybe often is a little generous, but it is considered by some to be the first platformer game. I'm still on the fence about this, so I will let you guys decide as you listen to this. The main thing that kind of makes it not a classic platformer is that it doesn't have a jumping mechanic like Donkey Kong does. And that's sort of why, also due to its popularity, Donkey Kong is seen by many as the first platformer game. But this does have climbing ladders to multiple quite literal platforms and levels, and you're really working in a vertical environment, avoiding and trapping these enemies as you go through the game. So it definitely has a lot of elements of it, but to me, when I think platformer, I think jumping, so I'm leaning towards its sort of inspiration or leads up to the first platformer, but it's hard to say. So that's why some people do consider this one to be the first platformer. This version actually wasn't super popular when it was ported over to North America. It did pretty well in Japan, I believe. But an Apple II port of the game in 1981 actually will be pretty popular and more popular than the arcade version in North America. So we might cover that or at least mention that then. And one thing I noticed about this game right away is that you're digging holes and burying the enemies. I was like, hey, that reminds me of that weird game where you're a samurai fighting velociraptor aliens, Hayankyo Alien. And it's actually been said that this was directly inspired by Hayankyo Alien. So all digging games in the future, I feel like, have some inspiration from that game, which is pretty cool. You know, not exactly, but this one did, which I love. And talking about the cabinet just a little bit, had some really nice art on it. Great, wacky alien designs, lots of colors. Oddly enough, I mean, in this game, you're kind of digging holes in like a brick floor and making aliens die from falls. But one of the flyers said you're sending aliens into a black hole. And I think that's taking a lot of liberties and suspension of disbelief, because there's like quite literally bricks in this whole entire play world that you're playing in. You also have an oxygen meter, so there is the implication that you're in space. But yeah, I don't know. There's some disconnect there. but let me talk about what the basic gameplay of Space Panic is now. You have to navigate through several floors that are connected by randomly placed ladders each level. It is only on one screen. There's no like scrolling to another screen or anything like that. But these floors kind of go the whole length of the screen. And I think there's about seven different floors that you can go on. And the objective is that several aliens spawn on screen, and the only way you can kill them is by digging a hole through the floor, having them fall into the hole, and then bury them so that they fall down a level and die. So it's like fall.
Sorry, Wes, I have to cut you off. What is your accent, man? Bury?
Bury?
What is that? Yeah.
That's how you say it. Bury?
Yeah, bury.
You can say bury too. Well, I don't know. Maybe, you know, taking too many English classes in college or something, I was like, wanted to try and pronounce it how it looks like it should be pronounced. Or maybe I picked it up from some random YouTuber that I watched.
That's not the American way, Wes. We don't pronounce things correctly.
All right. Well, you either bury or bury your the aliens. And I know I'm going to say it differently each time I say it through the rest of this video. So apologies in advance. Or recording, sorry, not video. And basically, yeah, you're trying to get them to die from fall damage, which is funny. There are three types of aliens, though, that can spawn as you progress through the levels and get to the harder difficulties. The first one, I believe, is just called Alien Monster or something like that, and it dies after falling one level. The second one is called Boss, and it dies after falling two levels. And the last one is called The Don. So I don't know if it was just the North American localization that gave it some weird mafia vibes to this alien game. But The Don has to fall through three floors to die.
Oh, wow.
You also have a time limit in the bottom right corner that is represented as an oxygen meter. Any leftover oxygen that you have turns into bonus points. And something I noticed that caught me off guard when I was playing it and when I was watching people play it is that if any alien falls through a hole and it's not, and they get back up out of the hole, because they're like, they kind of struggle and pull themselves up after a little bit. But if they get back up before you bury them, they level up one to the next type of alien. So you can make this game like super hard for yourself if you don't successfully get them to fall through the hole the first time.
I mean, it kind of sounds like if you're really good at the game, maybe that's a good strategy for your high score or whatever, though. It's cool.
That's true. Yeah, I'm not sure how it evens out, because obviously you're spending a little bit more time, so your oxygen meter, which is bonus points, goes down. But I'm sure there's a way to optimize it by getting people to level up. And the main threat of the game, these guys don't shoot you, but if they touch you, you die. And they're kind of chasing you all over the place throughout this maze. But that is the basic gameplay. Let me start talking about my ratings for this game. For graphics, I gave it a 3.75 out of 10. It has great colors and sprites. The colors, I don't know what it is about the game. It has something to do with the video chip that they're using or whatever, but I feel like the colors are just really crisp, which we don't always get. I'm pretty sure it's true color, as far as I can tell. And even though it's really weird that the ladders are bright pink and the bricks that kind of make up the different floors and surround you on the screen are green, it still looks pretty nice. Your character is very simple. He, despite the fact you have an oxygen meter, just seems to be a guy wearing a red t-shirt and blue pants. But, you know, he is a little bit detailed, so I like that there's some stuff going on there. But my favorite part has definitely got to be the aliens. They're all multicolored sprites. They have animations, whether they are moving back and forth or falling into the hole and struggling to pull themselves back out. And all of those animations look great. The base one, the alien monster, reminds me a lot of a Pac-Man ghost with antenna. It has the same sort of character to it with its big eyeballs that move around as it moves. I also really like the strange boss, which kind of looks like a giant V or W or something. It's really weird. And the Don looks like a giant white space crab. I mean, they all have super fun, unique designs. And lots of animations to go with it. So they were definitely my favorite part of it. And I don't know, just something about the bright colors, despite the fact that other than the bricks and the ladders, the background is black, I still thought it was pretty visually interesting. Moving on to sounds now, I gave this a 3 out of 10. Unfortunately, there's no background music, so I was surprised I went this high with the ratings, but I do love a lot of the other sounds in it. The character moving around is just okay. It's like a lot of really fast beeps that kind of sound like he's scurrying across the floor really, really fast. I didn't think it was too annoying, but you know, it wasn't anything great. The aliens make an interesting, wavy, sort of like uneasy, concerned noise when they get stuck in a hole, which I think is pretty funny. Wasn't anything super good, but I also enjoyed that. And then whenever an alien or your character falls through a hole, which your character can fall through a hole without taking any damage, they make the classic slide whistle falling noise. So that's always good. But my favorite sound, and maybe this biased me too much, but really it's the reason I gave it a 3, is that if you drop the boss or the Don only down one floor so that it doesn't die, it laughs at you because you didn't kill it. And it sounds so good. It's like an old cackling witch or something. I don't think it's digitized voice. I'm not sure, but it's just so funny and so like maniacal. And I just love that they put it in there because, yeah, you're definitely going to fail at killing those harder enemies a lot of times. So you get to hear it a fair bit, which was really fun. And so overall, I just felt like the sounds, while they were simple and, you know, there wasn't any background music, they were all very clear. None of them annoyed me and the laughing was so great. So I just really enjoyed that. Now moving on to gameplay, I gave this a 3.5 out of 10. Had a good bit of fun with it. Space Panic definitely has interesting gameplay and kind of feels like it's faster paced, but also has more strategy than Hyankyo Alien, which was just sort of a simple maze game where you had to bury the enemies. I switched back that time for you, Ben.
Thank you.
I really enjoyed the multiple levels, the like verticality that you're navigating to fight these creatures. And I like that there's the harder ones that have to fall multiple levels. I mean, it makes it so you have to dig the holes directly above each other so they actually fall through both of them. So it's really this extra planning and strategy. And you may have to loop back around a couple times to get them to actually fall into the right spot. So I thought that part was really fun. Since the ladders seem like they either had preset locations or they randomly changed every level. I did feel like you could get a bit screwed by them, but it also wasn't too hard to fake out the alien AI, so I do feel like it kind of balances out there. And I gotta say, it was a lot tougher than I expected. I mean, you can get pinned in a corner and realize there's no ladder near you to jump up or jump down pretty fast, and just one hit and you're done. But I definitely think it felt like really fresh and new gameplay. I mean, it's kind of got Pac-Man feels to it, and obviously it takes inspiration from Hankyo Alien, but it gets you thinking in platforms, you know, instead of thinking in portals. Moving on to that platformer type of game that we're definitely going to be seeing lots of next year. And one little side note is that when you get a game over to enter your high score, it actually loads into a level of the game where all the different letters that you would need to enter are spread out, and you have to hit them with your shovel to enter your initials, which is just a fun little way to do that that I really enjoyed. And now for relevance, even though I'm conflicted on whether or not we should call this the first platformer, I did give it an 8.5 out of 10. I think it's still super relevant. Donkey Kong gets all the fame, but this definitely brings a lot to the table for the platformer genre. To me, it felt a bit more like a vertical Pac-Man, you know, because you're chasing these things are chasing you back and forth. But I can definitely see how the verticality of the game and the ladders that it has and climbing in between levels is very influential. And so overall, that left me with a 3.5 out of 10 for Space Panic. It's a fun game with great colors and fun sounds. It's really the full package, and it has the added relevance of being the first platforming game, sort of. So it definitely is not an out-of-the-park home run for me, but still just a really fun game and very different from everything that's coming out at this time. So I really enjoyed taking a look at it.
Nice. Yeah, I thought that one would be pretty cool. It sounds like it was. Hey, Exidy, come on. What are you doing? Why are you doing this?
Yeah.
It's instead coming from Universal, a name that has been getting larger and larger and larger, I feel like, for us.
I was just going to say, I feel like they've been doing a lot of good stuff recently. It'll be real fun to take a look at everything they've done over 1980 and see if this is their year, you know?
Yeah, definitely. But let's keep going. We've got a couple honorable mentions before we wrap it up for today. Starting off, we have one bootleg of Space Panic by Ender, this time copying the Universal game. So that did come out in 80 as well.
Now let's move on to some computer games. We have Creative Computing for November. Only one game in here that we wanted to mention. It's called Heart Driver, and it looks like a scrolling playfield racing sort of game, like Superbug, but it was in ASCII graphics and for the PET of all computers. Pretty interesting.
That's pretty cool. And then let's move on to the TI-99 computer. We don't get too many games for this computer, but it is the only one that has that 16-bit microchip in it, so I'm definitely excited about any TI-99 games that come up. I also want to say the TI-99, like almost all of their games, has amazing music, so we'll maybe try to play a couple clips of the music for some of these games. But the games themselves in this group, at least, weren't that good. All these came out sometime in the fourth quarter, so we're just mentioning them now in November. This first one is Hunt the Wumpus by Texas Instruments, and it's Hunt the Wumpus, but it does have graphics, true color graphics at that, so at least it has that.
And then also we have Indoor Soccer, aka Soccer 5-a-Side by Texas Instruments. Unfortunately, it played pretty slow, but it did have an interesting aiming mechanic, the sort of style where you hold down a button to kick, a little dial goes around to show the direction of your kick, and when you let go or hit the button again, it goes in that direction.
And then the last one for the fourth quarter was Hustle, published by Milton Bradley and Sega, who made the original Hustle, which was a version of like a snake game. And so this one, I have seen dates for 81 for it, but the manual and the cartridge both say 1980, and it was just a copy of the simple snake game.
then next we have Escape from Traum, I'm going to say. Escape from Traum Adventure by Jim Pearson and Adventure International. Unfortunately, right now, though, it's only for TRS-80. It is going to come out on the Apple II next year, though, with some color graphics. So we are going to wait on this one, but we'll probably review it then.
And then finally, we're going to mention the Seaload magazine for November of 1980. And there's nothing of note in December. So this is it for Seaload for us, which is a TRS-80 magazine. A pretty big one at that. And this one, it did have a game called Fox and Hounds by Don Dilly, I'm going to say, which was a surround or trap type game where there's like enemies on the screen. There's a lot of the screen's kind of filled with these boxes, and you try to push the boxes into the enemies and squish them, essentially. This one did have some sound and animation, so I wanted to mention it for that reason. And that will do it for us today, so I hope you guys enjoyed today's episode. I mean, we did Battlezone, which was a pretty cool tank game in first person and in vector graphics by Atari. Something we haven't really... I feel like the majority of the public would have never seen anything like that until that game came out, so I bet they really liked it, but we have seen a game pretty similar to it come out already on Play-Doh, which hurt my enjoyment of it a little bit, but it was still pretty cool. And then Wes, you did Radar Scope by Nintendo, which was a Galaxian-style game with perspective. I did Spectar by Exidy, which was not a good game. It was like a Pac-Man game, but you could shoot things. Sounds cool, but just check it out. It's not as good as you think. I think maybe this could be done well. We might see a game that kind of does that even in next episode, Wes. I don't want to spoil anything, but we'll have to... There might be a good game that does that next episode. We'll have to see. But then finally, you did Space Panic, which was the big one for today. What many call the first platform game ever, and it's by Universal. And it also had, sounds like, some pretty good graphics, pretty decent sound effects. So it's an all-around good game. I feel like it's kind of like Hyankyo Alien, but like a vertical version.
Yeah.
And so it's interesting that maybe Hyankyo Alien... Man, I knew it was somewhat relevant when we played it, but it's really paving the path for maybe some really big games in the future, yeah. Like a Donkey Kong.
Yeah, absolutely. Never thought that that would have had an influence on that, but that's part of the reason we love doing this podcast, and hopefully part of the reason that you all love listening to it as well. So make sure to check out our website. You can check out Hyankyo Alien if you don't know what that one was, an interesting digging type game, and we have tons of other great information on there. Also, make sure to follow us on Twitter, where we post announcements. And if you have any questions, feel free to send us an email.
And with that, we'll catch you next time.
See you all next time.